Ladies and gentlemen, Sergio Ramos is a danger to life and limb. He's a menace. Call the police before someone gets hurt. Oh, look, he's been smashed in the head. Ha ha ha, ha ha ha, that's funny. Get up, mate. It's a man's game. There's nothing wrong with you. Yes, this week's episode is entitled Love Your Neighbour, Even If He's Sergio Ramos. It hasn't been a good week for Real Madrid's captain, knocked out of the Copa del Rey, the title race, and by Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. Sort of. So after two Clásico defeats in less than a week, where do Los Blancos go? To win anything this season, it's got to be the Champions League. That's going to take a sharp improvement in form and a huge slice of luck. Now, when has that ever happened? What they need is a player who can put the ball in the back of the net. Someone like that guy who plays for Atletico. I'm sure he'd love to play for Real Madrid. Elsewhere, La Liga giants Getafe and Alaves bullied the minnows of Betis and Villarreal. And there were farcical scenes. And yes, I'll keep on using it until they keep stopping having farcical scenes. Just draw a straight line. Make a decision before we all die. Celta Vigo have hired and fired two coaches while you've been trying to figure out whether that was offside. We had hoped to have Terry Gibson ready on the line from Barcelona, but he's still commentating on Saturday's Huesca versus Sevilla game. Now, Terry, come in, Terry. Are you there in Barcelona? Terry, how's Peter Beardsley? There was a turn up on La Liga TV this week.
Yeah, no, he's such a good guy as well. I obviously know Peter from playing against him for a few years, and I think he helped them out of the hole. I think they had one or two people that missed out from action this weekend due to late notice and the game being showed elsewhere in the UK. So Peter was asked to fill in, and he's done it admirably. And do you know what? He's really enthusiastic about Spanish football. He's been out recently watching games out here, particularly Barcelona. He's a big fan of Lionel Messi. So he was thrilled to be asked, and he threw himself right into it with very little notice. But his enthusiasm shone through, I hope.
I tell you, more importantly, we'll get onto the Clásico, but for people too young to remember, Peter Beardsley would have done brilliantly in La Liga, wouldn't he? Would have been spot on.
Yeah. I mean, he was really a fantastic player. He was probably the first in a number of years to play in that position, which no one had ever heard of in England, and I wasn't really sure what position it was. So it became known as the Peter Beardsley role, where you wasn't a centre-forward and you wasn't a midfield player. In short, he was a number 10. He was a second striker. He was playing deeper than the centre-forward and given licence to roam around. So he did that for Gary Lineker. He did it at Liverpool for John Aldridge. Of course, many years at Newcastle. And speaking to him this weekend, clubs I'd forgotten he'd played for, like Carlisle, Vancouver, Whitecaps, Manchester City on loan, Fulham. I'm sure I've missed some out. But he just come across as... The first time I've spent a couple of full days in his company, of course, and his love for football just clearly come through. So he was more than happy to be involved in watching the Clásico and getting to know the other teams and players in the league. And it's been a great week for that as well. It's been some really good games.
Well, let's talk about the Clásico, shall we? In fact, we've had two since we were last recording here. I'll fire a few questions at you. Pele, Mandela, are Barca better than Real Madrid? Or has it become psychologically impossible for Real Madrid? Zen Green Yoda, Madrid lack the stars to deal with Barca. They need quality star signing. Stephen Bell, too many times Real Madrid had no one in the penalty area when attacking, meaning anything decent from Vinny was left wanting. So what's the gap? What have we learned between the gap between the two? Obviously, it's been a great week for Barcelona. Whatever slim hopes there was of Real Madrid winning the title, we've got to say, is surely gone. The Copa del Rey is gone as well. But so just that one, first of all, what is the difference between the two teams?
I think there's a bigger difference than what we've seen in these last two games, because I don't think Barcelona played particularly well. I think they've just done enough. I think the first game in the Cup in midweek, it was very even. Real Madrid gave it a real good go, and then 5 minutes in the second half, one goal changes the game. Then we see the element of the psychological advantage that Barcelona have, where Real Madrid thought they were playing well, they thought they were in with a chance, did well in the first leg to get the 1-1 draw, and all of a sudden things go against them again. And that's when, as a footballer, you find it hard to then continue to have that belief that you went out to start the game with, you thought tonight is going to be our night, you're playing so well, then the goal goes against you. Then you suddenly find it a real uphill task to generate that belief again. And the psychological advantage Barcelona have shouldn't be underestimated. But I think pure and simply, in the last decade, with the amount of league titles that Barcelona have won, the amount of derbies, Clásicos they've won, the amount of times they've won in the Bernabeu, It's not just that. I think there has been a difference in quality. Domestically, Barcelona have ruled Champions League, in which Barcelona would love to have had the amount of trophies that Real Madrid have. Real Madrid have had the better of it. So it's, but it can't go on. And Real Madrid can't just live on what we have called a seven-game season in the Champions League and the knockout stages to maintain their status as one of the giants of Europe, which they are. But they need to be doing better domestically. 7 out of 10 titles for Barcelona, 2 to Real Madrid in the last decade is underachieving. They haven't won that. I mean, Barcelona, is it their 6th cup final on the trot they're going into against Valencia? So Real Madrid don't even match that. I think it's going to be an ugly summer at Real Madrid. I was talking to some journalists while I was here, Spanish journalists, and that was their description, that it's going to be an ugly summer at Real Madrid with brutal goings, change of manager. It needs a complete overhaul. So I think we're going to see some big action from Real Madrid in the summer. They have to. They have to do better than what they're doing. We can't keep writing them out of the league title race at the beginning of March.
So let's skip on to those questions then. Steve Coleman, who's been rumoured to go in for Real Madrid, and he also wants to know about Barca as well. Alex, with Gareth Bale being whistled when he was substituted, is a summer departure best for everyone, assuming they can find a club willing to pay a huge fee for an injury-prone 30-year-old? Shane, is there a club stupid enough to pay £100 million for Bale? And Callum, do you think Solari has done enough to keep the job permanently? And if so, will they be signing Galacticos? And everyone wants to know whether Bale's off, basically.
Yeah, I think yesterday was a clear sign. No one stood up for, and I haven't had to stand up for him all the time since he's been at Real Madrid, but there's been times of trouble where he has taken the brunt of the blame and criticism. But I have really sort of championed the cause of what he's been done for Real Madrid, how good he's been at Real Madrid. I understand the injury issues. So this weekend, I was predicting that he would play. I think, in my opinion, Gareth Bale will always play over Lucas Vasquez. I think Vasquez is a hard-working, enthusiastic, slightly underrated player. I think he's a decent player. But when it comes to playing for Real Madrid, and particularly playing in Clasicos, you play the Gareth Bales of this world. So I think Solari was setting himself up for trouble by selecting Gareth Bale. Marcelo is different. His form has been really poor. But Gareth Bale in recent weeks has been coming off the bench, scoring goals. We've seen evidence he's angry. Things are not happy between him and the manager. Maybe the club. We had the outburst at the end of the Champions League final when he let fly, not knowing that Zidane was going to be leaving. So he's not in the greatest of moods. And in yesterday, in fairness, when he was given a chance, I don't think he grabbed it. Now, I know he's capable of grabbing it, but it did look to me as if he was an element of surprise that he was picked by a manager that doesn't particularly fancy him at the moment. And his body language wasn't good. And then we saw after, and it almost appeared, didn't it, on schedule. The hour had gone, and it was a case of Solari thinking to himself, I'll give him a go. If he doesn't do it within the hour, I'll take him off. And that's exactly what happened. And I think it's inevitable now that Gareth Bale will leave Real Madrid, and inevitable that he will return back to the Premier League. My favourite bet would be, from a sporting point of view, I think a return back to Spurs. If they can do it somehow. I think he looks like the type of player at the moment that wants to go back to familiar surroundings, to be surrounded by supporters that won't be like the Real Madrid fans are being to him at the moment and would welcome him. But he'd be a returning hero if he went back to Tottenham Hotspur. And I think sporting-wise, that would be the best move for him. But Spurs going to be able to afford any sort of transfer deal from Real Madrid? Rumours are they're interested in Christian Eriksen. But we're so far away from the transfer window. But in my opinion, after seeing Gareth Bale yesterday, the body language, he didn't grasp the opportunity to show people that he wanted to stay and he should stay at Real Madrid and should be in the team every game. So I think there was evidence that with the reaction of the crowd, he's going to be one of those that's probably going to be leaving the club in the summer.
The only thing I'd say about those transfer rumours linking the Eriksen move going the other way, transfer rumours often mention swap deals, and real transfers very rarely end up in swap deals. I think it's very complicated, isn't it, to get a transfer like a Gareth Bale. You know, it's a massive deal, isn't it, to sort out the price. Because, what you know, say he is going back to Spurs, Spurs will be offering a fraction of what Real Madrid want, and then they'll have to come together. So to get that lined up with an outgoing transfer at the same time always seems a very, very a difficult thing. they need to start working on it now if they want bailout in the summer.
Yeah, totally agree. And also, you've got to take into account the wages that he's earning at Real Madrid. He's not going to get anywhere near that at Tottenham Hotspur. But from a football sporting perspective, in terms of his personal life as well, he's appeared to be happy at Spurs. He's not going to go back, clearly, and play for Wales. I wouldn't have thought he'd be rushing to go and play back for Cardiff, Swansea, Wrexham. So it has to be in the Premier League. Is a move to a Manchester United going to appeal to him, where if he has one bad game, supporters might start getting on his back? He knows if he goes back to Tottenham Hotspur, then he can afford the bad game here and there because he was such a success in the past. But it's a long way from happening. It's easier said than done for everybody to come to a deal with any Premier League club. I think it's unlikely. I don't know if you agree. Would he move to another European league? Could you see him moving to Milan or Juventus or another league across Europe? I think it's inevitable. I don't know if you agree that he'll end up back in the UK in the Premier League.
I think his experience and the way he's dealt with being in Spain would suggest that going back to the UK is the obvious place to go. Maybe Bayern Munich in a big club with lots of money who like a star. He's obviously not going to go to Juve where Cristiano Ronaldo is. He doesn't look like an Italian-style player to me. It would be a left-field one to go anywhere other than the Premier League. So it would seem the obvious case. And all those big Premier League clubs, they would talk to Bale and his people. They'd talk to Real Madrid, wouldn't they?
Oh, of course they would. Yeah. Yeah, they could. And I think they take into account how the club has, the team's success has been in recent seasons. Domestically, not very good, but Champions League, he scored two goals in the final, six, 7 months ago. We're not talking about a player who's peaked and on his way and downhill. It's a player that just needs to find the right fit at the moment to be playing on a regular basis to make sure he can stay fit, if possible, and then recover his best form. At the moment, that's not Real Madrid, so I think he has to move on.
So Solari moving on as well. Pekak says, I think that's how you say it, what next for Real Madrid then? Would they bring Jose back? And I say, please, no.
I keep seeing it linked, but it keeps coming from the same source. Is it Ramon Calderon?
Yes, yeah, the old president.
And I read an article today in a paper saying that he's returning as president next season. And his idea is to bring in Jose Mourinho. I have no idea where that information has come from. I've not heard anything that Florentino Perez is leaving the club. So, again, that's the type of speculation that occurs where a Chinese whisper starts off and Jose Mourinho is now denying there's any interest in Real Madrid. It would be hard to imagine, I don't know if you agree, Jose Mourinho managing Real Madrid again if their philosophy is to be playing the younger players that they've bought in the last few years.
Yeah.
So Real Madrid, for Jose Mourinho, will need to spend, I was just going to say, 200 million. That's nowhere near enough, is it?
No, that's a player and a half, isn't it?
Yeah, that's, I'm thinking like 2 years ago, how time changes. So it's that half a billion, 500 million to get back in the quality that they should be. I know there'll be player sales. There has to be. But their philosophy in recent seasons has been recently Brahim Diaz, Vinicius, Dani Ceballos, Odriozola, bringing Marcus Llorente through. That doesn't fit with a Jose Mourinho squad. So when I said it's going to be ugly, I meant in terms of it has to be drastic this season. Toni Kroos has been criticised. They brought in Mariano Diaz. He's another player who hasn't been given opportunities. There's been some bad signings. I mean, at the moment, this is classic Real Madrid. Sergio Reguilón, I think, has been the standout player in the two Clásicos for Real Madrid in terms of what we expect from a young left-back. So I think he deserves his place over Marcelo. They bought Teo Hernandez 5 minutes ago, 30 million. Yeah. He's on loan at Real Sociedad. He's 21, Reguilón's 22. Surely they knew that Reguilón had a chance. So why did they buy Teo Hernandez from Atletico Madrid? Why did they buy Odriozola for 30-odd million when there was no need to spend... They've spent the best part of 50 million on fullbacks that one is not getting a game, the other one's out on loan at another club, and the two that are still there have come through the Real Madrid system in Carvajal and Reguilón. So there needs to be more organisation and more thought going into it. Bringing Mariano Diaz back, they're not playing him. There's no... He wasn't even on the bench last night. in a Clasico, but they didn't have another striker on the bench. It was filled with midfield players who were all pretty much the same. Ceballos, Valverde, Isco and Asensio. Why would you not have Mariano Diaz? Benzema is like a protected species. So it's will he be another one that has to make way? He doesn't, for me, do it on a consistent basis. 1 minute we're all lauding the fact that Benzema, I'm on a rant here, sorry everyone. Benzema is on this role and he's got the soul of a number 10 and this of the number 9. And he's got less goals than Stuani again this season. Yet people rave about Benzema left, right and centre. I think he's so underachieved as Real Madrid centre-forward in the last couple of years. I think he was a good foil for Ronaldo, but he got away with the fact that Ronaldo was getting so many goals a season. I mean, I think back to the 9 years Benzema has been here. Morata's gone, Higuain's gone, and now Mariano Diaz is there and not getting a game, not even getting on the bench. And it's like he's totally protected. He doesn't get the criticism that Gareth Bale gets, and I think he should be in line for that criticism. So I think centre-forward is a must, but it was only last week, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Luis Suarez, Barcelona need another centre-forward, and he's shown form again in the last week. So, but I think there needs to be big movement from Real Madrid in the summer for them to get back to challenging Barcelona over the 38-game season and challenging them more in every Clásico. Because this season, was it 5-1, another win, a win in the Copa del Rey? They're winning too many of them, Barcelona. And that, was it 96-95 now to Barcelona? 10 years ago, I'm guessing Real Madrid were 20 ahead. So that's they've caught that up quickly. And as I said, I don't think Barcelona played particularly well in either of the games, but still had too much for Real Madrid.
Owen Thompson, he says, a big team's allowed a rebuilding year. A slight mitigation here for Real Madrid. A down season might be good in the long run. Ceballos, Odriozola, Asensio, Vallejo, all logging minutes. Which would be, I'd have more sympathy for that if they're obviously going in an actual direction. I'm not sure they will be. I think I can see a rapid about change coming in the summer with this ugly summer as you describe it.
Yeah, those people there we talked about, some of them would be going, won't they? You can imagine that Dani Ceballos, he'd probably move on. If he's not playing regular now, are they going to play him? Is he good enough to play on a regular basis for Real Madrid to challenge Barcelona? Is he at the level of Rakitic and Busquets, and even Arthur, who's made a fantastic impression. Sergio Roberto, Ceballos, unproven. I don't know yet. I don't think so. He's going to need to go and get his career going and play on a regular basis again. So those players there we mentioned, that some of those are going to have to be casualties as well. You can't keep every player in the squad. So they need to start with a list. Are they allowed a down yet? I agree with you. If it was obvious what they were doing, yes. But Real Madrid, it is Real Madrid we're talking about, so they need still to be competitive. They still need to be doing better what they are now. I mean, they're 12 points behind Barcelona. They're 5 points behind Atletico Madrid. This is the first game in March. So there needs to be an improvement, a massive improvement. I've no idea who's going to be the manager. Won't be Solari. I clearly don't think it's going to be him. And I'm not entirely sure what direction Florentino Perez wants to take the club in. So it's a massive summer for Real Madrid. And I'm saying this, don't write them off winning the Champions League. And then does that make everything okay again? Do they then think we compete for the 7 games in the knockout stages in the final of the Champions League? We should be doing better domestically. Or have they learned the lesson that that's what they are, a team that can compete against the finest teams in Europe in knockout competition, in short bursts, but they can't compete in a 38-game season in La Liga. So, big question marks. But I wouldn't write them off winning the Champions League. I think it's unlikely just because the sheer weight of numbers that took someone. No one's ever won it twice in its new format. They've done 3. Can it be 4? Can it be 5 out of 6? God knows. The only thing I would say, in the past when they've won it, they have had a player who gets 15 goals a season in that competition, which is not there at the moment.
We've had a load of questions as well about Barcelona. I'm just going to focus on one sort of line of those So thank you to everyone who sent them in. But Gav, for example, do you think Rakitic is off in the summer? It's difficult to let him go. He's a legend, in my opinion. Should be kept for two seasons. Craig, there are, these two Clasicos reaffirm my belief it's too soon to sell Rakitic. Roti, is Rakitic the most underrated midfielder in Europe? And the only dissenting voice is Ballon-Pierre, who says, am I the only one who understands why Barcelona are trying to sell Rakitic? The midfield is already congested with De Jong coming in the summer. Surely selling a Rakitic in form helps to recoup some of the money spent on De Jong, or am I wrong?
It's a good business point, isn't it? The one at the end, Rakitic would still be really in demand because he still is an incredible player. And if you think about the period of time that he's been at the club, I think I'm trying to get this right. He did play alongside Xavi, didn't he? He certainly played alongside Iniesta.
Yeah.
The departure of those two players, he's made it a lot smoother, isn't he?
Yeah.
For Busquets, for Barcelona. And we kind of take him for granted now that he's at that level. He's world class, had a fantastic World Cup. People that knew about him at Sevilla knew he had qualities. You wonder whether a player can make that move from Sevilla to Barcelona and make that step up. And he has done that. And now he does go unnoticed. And the goal last night in the Clasico was typical Rakitic. I mean, it was incredible to think Real Madrid had possession of the ball. They lose possession. And that goal was pretty much constructed by two players, half the pitch.
Yeah.
And between him and Sergio Roberto, Rakitic just runs past everyone, plays a little give and go. I looked at the goal, this fault from about five or six different players. And it was a three-quarter pace attack as well. It wasn't a counter-attack where Dembele was flying down the wing and cutting inside and playing a little give and go with Suarez. It was no more than jogging pace from Rakitic. No one picked him up. A nice little 1-2. And he's at three-quarter pace by the time he gets in the box and has the ability, the quality to think Courtois. So it was a remarkable goal. And I think that's the biggest credit we can pay to Rakitic, that no one's banging on every week that no Barcelona haven't replaced Xavi and Iniesta. He's not as good as Xavi and Iniesta, but I don't know of another player that could have come anywhere near doing what he's done at Barcelona, being recognised as one of the go-to players with different managers that Barcelona have had in his time. And I think he's been terrific. So from that point of view, Barcelona shouldn't sell him. There's still plenty of business left for Rakitic to achieve at Barcelona. It appears he wants to stay. But from the business perspective, bringing in young players, bringing in more players, if someone came along and offered a lot of money for Rakitic, it might be something that interests him, it might be something that interests Barcelona. But from if you're a Barcelona fan, I can't imagine you'd want to see Rakitic go just now.
No, maybe all of this is them floating it, or you know, people involved floating it up and seeing if someone, you know, PSG or someone come in and put a lot of money on the table, in which case he might end up going.
That might satisfy him and the club, mightn't it?
Yeah.
If PSG coming off him, I don't know, twice as much as he's earning at Barcelona, then he might see that new project in a different manner.
Yes, that's how we describe them now, isn't it? New project.
Yeah.
Like when you went to Coventry.
My money. Yeah.
Let's talk about Ramos. Right, the questions have been flying in. So a pick of those. Cameron, is Ramos too much of a liability in the Clasico? Chagipta, how can Sergio Ramos get away with intentional elbows, trailing legs? But the moment Longley goes up for a header with his arms a little high, a yellow is shown. And Andrew, what does it take for refs in Spain to use VAR, specifically Carvajal handball, Ramos punch on Messi? What does it take for refs to adequately punish Ramos? This is where I think natural justice breaks down. Can we all just admit he always knows what he's doing and it's always on purpose? I'm not sure you can use VAR and prejudge that Sergio Ramos is always guilty.
What's your opinion? Is that your opinion, or was that a tweet?
That was a tweet from, yes, that was Andrew. No, the last one was me saying yes. I mean, I know the he's obviously, you know, he's a piece of work, is Sergio Ramos. I do have a lot of admiration for him. The no-look foul is a tremendous departure. You know, the fouling Messi without even looking at him is good effort. But, you know, he's a human being. We've got to show him a bit of love along the way, Terry.
But no, it's not. It's the referee's job to make that decision, isn't it? We know what Ramos is going to do. Messi knows what he's going to do. The Barcelona players know what he's going to do. Everybody knows what he wants to do. And of course, when they're going through this run of results against Barcelona, can you imagine? We know what he's like. Can you imagine that his frustration, game in, game out? He's opposite number Pique, ruling the Bernabeu. Loving every minute, lording it about. Messi running rings around him, knocking the ball one side, running the other. We know Ramos is going to let fly. There have been cases where he does get red cards. It's not a surprise to anybody. It is up to the officials to deal with it. The elbow on Messi, are you 100% he meant it? We know, we're assuming it because it's Ramos.
Yes.
So if we take that out, I'm not convinced he I think we're doing it, we're prejudging it because it's Ramos. I think if it had been Toni Kroos, yep, we might have looked at it different. But because it's Ramos, and it's fair to say he's got previous. The Lenglet one, he nailed him.
Yeah.
Lenglet. In my opinion, as an ex-player, he nailed Ramos.
So would you have given a red card?
No, because it was against Ramos. Right. He died by the sword. It was, but Lenglet knew exactly what he was doing. He was doing it at the opposite end of the pitch where it wouldn't be a penalty, and it was an element of looking after himself. But with the technique he used, he made sure that he clattered into Ramos. So, and Ramos can't complain because he's been doing it for years. But Lenglet knew exactly what he was doing, and he was prepared to take the chance. He wouldn't have done it in his own penalty era. So I think that's wrong when people are saying, oh, that wasn't a yellow card. That was, Lenglet knew what he was doing. And it's to be expected, isn't it? Surely. That's how it goes with players like Sergio Ramos. They dish it out, they have to take it back. And Lenglet surprised me, actually. I didn't have him down as doing that. But when I saw that, when you see the replay, I think he definitely, he's not going out to actually maim him and hurt him, but he's gone up to give him a clump.
So when people call for ex-pros to become refs, if that happened, all the ex-pros would go around and say, no, he had it coming, I'll leave that one.
I think you'd have to come away from the personalities, wouldn't you? Right. But I think there are times where we can see when you know someone has done something untoward.
Right, yeah, yeah.
We might have more experience of... There will be people that think Lenglet jumped with his arms up to leverage. There is times when that's clear, but there are other times where there's force put in the shell in the arm and the elbow's bent at a certain angle. It wasn't in the face of Ramos, it was in the side of the head, so it wasn't the worst challenge you're likely to see. But there was an element of he went up to nail Ramos, which I'm not talking as a referee, I'm talking as someone who would have played against Ramos and probably would have done exactly the same as Lenglet at some stage. If Ramos is kicking lumps out of Lionel Messi and doing it on regular basis in a Clásico, then there is an element of retribution. And you hope as a player you get away with it. It's the dark side of football, I guess. The dark side of any sport where you try and get away with what you can and get hacked off that one player in particular is asking for it. And if the referee's not going to dish out the punishment, then it's natural that someone's going to take it upon themselves to go and give that player piece of their own medicine.
Right, there will be more on VAR and what it's good for after a little break. One last word on the Clásico from Richard, who was there, was lucky enough to be at the game last night. Surprised how much they got in the back of Vinicius. Yeah, it's frustrating, but he's 18. Senior leaders went missing. They should have got the stick. But we'll leave the Clásico there because there are more than two clubs in Spain, and we'll be talking about all of the others after this little break. So So welcome back. Let's have a look at all of the other games that have been played this weekend. Rayo lost 2-0 against Girona. Espanyol scored in the first minute against Valladolid. That was 3-1. Villarreal lost again at home to Alaves. The Clásico we've discussed already. Sunday's games, Eibar beat Celta Vigo by a 1-0. More on Celta Vigo to come. Developments there. Betis lost at home to Getafe. We got trolled. Well, trolled, but did you see the Betis Twitter account took you up on your predictions, Terry? They didn't enjoy them.
There you go.
But who was right? Yes. Real Sociedad against Atletico. Valencia. Oh, sorry. Atletico won that game 2-0. Valencia super goals. Rodrigo scored a fine goal when they beat Atletico. What I've missed out, Terry, brings us on to the VAR scenes. Lucas, well done to Huesca. What's going on with Sevilla? The La Liga slump seems to have no end. Huesca won by 2-1. Just talk us through that. I thought that game was never going. I thought the Clásico was going to have to kick off late, Terry, because it was just going on forever. Now, they got two right, but the length of time to make to make up your mind.
Four VAR decisions. Four VAR decisions in one game.
Yeah, but the amount of time to make a wrong decision about an offside, unless there is something that they're looking at that we're not looking at about that, the offside on the Sevilla goal, so the first of the three in quick succession. Just baffling.
So is that the one where André Silva was scored?
Yes.
Or the one where Munir scored?
It's where Munir scores, isn't it? In the
isn't he behind the goalkeeper?
So not the Munir one. Yeah, the Munir one is not straightforward, isn't it? That's a bulk standard one for everyone who's done the line. You need to get that one right. There's only one player, the goalkeeper's in advance. So good. Yeah. That was good VAR. Well done, VAR. It's the one where it was clearly offside in the build-up to the previous goal, to the one that stood.
98 minutes, that goal, the winning goal.
Yes.
And all of a sudden I looked and I was co-commentating on the game. And the Clásico was kicking off in 2 minutes. Like, I don't think they were ever going to delay the start of the Clásico due to Huesca and Sevilla overrunning. The questions about Sevilla, I think similar to Betis. Betis have gone out of Europe, gone out of the Copa del Rey. They've barely had a midweek off. The games have taken their toll. I could see Ben Yedder last night, who has to be sharp to beat his best. He was exhausted. Franco Vasquez came on for 20 minutes and couldn't raise a gallop. So I think it's taken its toll on those teams. With Sevilla as well, there's about six players that have been injured. They've constantly had about six players injured, so Machin hasn't had a chance to rotate the squad and freshen it up on a regular basis. It's been pretty much 18 available to him for the last 2 months, I'd say. So I think in terms of Betis, they're out of the Copa del Rey, out of the Europa League. It was a tough game against Getafe, but Sevilla, they need to somehow freshen up. But they're back in action again this week in the Europa League, back in action next week in the Liga. Another game in the Europa League. I worked it out last night. I think it was 46 games that Sevilla have played. Huesca are only going to play 40 all season. The minimum game Sevilla are going to play now, if they don't progress any further in the Europa League, is 61. And that squad's you can't carry the injuries they're carrying and expect over a 61-game season to be at your best. You're going to have a slump, and it's making it really tough for them now to finish where they want to be, where we all thought they were going to be after the first half of the season, in the top four. That's really open now. That race for the fourth position, assuming Real Madrid don't slump anymore and take their eye off the ball completely in La Liga, the fourth place is up for grabs with six, seven teams now.
With the mighty Getafe going well, aren't they?
Just, incredible.
Yeah, just keep on doing it, don't they? What a job Bordalás has done. And nothing particularly fancy about it, all based on hard work and good organisation.
And improving the players that he's got as well.
Yeah.
I think with a number of the players we've seen over the recent years, it's not the first time we've seen lots of these players. Damien Suarez is playing the best football of his career. He's improved. His mentality has improved. He's not as... I was going to be technical. He's not a lunatic anymore. Certainly not as much of a lunatic as he used to be. Cabrera has been knocking around in La Liga and playing in the second division. He's come up. I mean, look at the effect that Jaime Mata has had. He's first time in the top division. Mm-hmm. The goals he's scoring, the way he's playing. They're the goal scorers against Betis. I gave them respect by predicting that they could beat Betis. I've been asked the question, I guess, can they Can they finish in the top four? Out of respect, I'm going to say yeah, because what, we're 26 games in now. This isn't 10, 12, 18 games, half a season. This is 26 games, and they deserve to be in fourth place. Now, he's got the benefit of the opposite end to Sevilla and Betis, where they're not involved in Europe, they're not involved in the cup competition, and he's a manager that likes to play on a regular basis his strongest team. He doesn't have to worry from one week to the next about rotating. And the players look in sync with each other. They obviously believe in everything they do with that manager. And is it me? He just looks a bit classier every week now. He actually looks like a top-class manager. He's got the blazer on, his beard's sorted his beard out. He looks like a manager now who believes they're going into Europe and he might be heading for a bigger club than Getafe. Yeah. They've been fantastic and they continue to astound. It was an astonishing performance. They didn't just deserve to win that game. They won it comfortably. The first half, they were incredible. Betis rallied in the second half and Joaquin comes on and gets a fine goal. But Getafe fully deserved the 3 points.
I'm not sure Europe is ready for the Coliseo Alfonso Perez. But we'll see.
They had it a while ago, didn't they, under Laudrup?
Yeah, they've been in. They have been in the Europa League before. Yeah.
Yeah, and they had success. But are they ready for the Champions League? Oh God.
let me ask you another one, Terry. Spanish Football Canada says Rodrigo is the player of the week. Can you discuss the re-emergence of the media punter? Funnily enough, having that conversation about Peter Beardsley. Now, he says Messi, Rodrigo, Benzema, Griezmann, Ben Yedder, Aspas. I'm not sure. He says, by his definition, deeper than a striker, but an advance of a number 10. Complicated, isn't it?
As in terms of, the question is asking me to what? Pick one of them?
No. Is it a thing that role has? Is that coming back into play?
I kind of guess it is. It's an extension of maybe teams that don't want to commit fully to a 4-4-2 and lose a player from the midfield, where they do worry about, have a concern about getting outnumbered in midfield. So it's a position we've seen even Eden Hazard play for Chelsea at times, although he's sometimes played right up front on his own. I think it depends on the game. I think all those players mentioned pretty much all would prefer to play as one of the main strikers. But I think they've all got the intelligence which you need to know when to drop in, to drop deeper, and play as a sort of auxiliary midfielder, linking up play with a striker. But I think most of those in general still prefer to play with their back to goal, which is what essentially strikers have to be good at.
Yeah, interesting.
And making those runs in behind. I mean, at Gamero's goal for Valencia, for instance, it's a classic Gamero goal. He's playing on the shoulder. He wants the ball to go wide. He's going to get in on the goalkeeper, get ahead of the defender and slide the ball in. Rodrigo, it goes back to what we were saying about Benzema. You're either a centre-forward or you're not. If you're a centre-forward, you're judged on goals. If you want to be that attacking, creative midfield player, you still have to contribute goals, but you have to be making a lot of goals. My moan about that position in recent years has been there's been too many players that play that position that don't score goals and don't create chances and don't really contribute. But it's a manager hedging his bets by not playing too up front, but kind of asking a player to do some sort of role that looks similar to up front. So it's a position that's a specialist for me.
Marlocky wants to know who's going down in this chaotic season. Tapiwa, our Celta, destined to be taken by the grim reaper of relegation. And he sent that before we add the news, the long-awaited news, it must be said, Terry, of Miguel Cardoso off, and he's still walking around the airport looking for the door.
And, I did feel for him.
Yes.
Lost luggage and all that. Yeah. Clearly was a mess.
Yes, and as is Celta Vigo, I'm afraid.
Yeah, Antonio Mohamed got sacked after collecting 14 points in 12 games.
Yeah.
Cardoso got 11 points from 14, so he got less points in more games.
Yeah.
So clearly, inevitably, he was going to get the sack. They're in a perilous position. I tend to look at Villarreal and think their squad should get them out of it, the quality of the players. I'm not sure that's the case at Celta. I think that the better players are young, inexperienced. They allow too many defenders to leave them. They haven't replaced them properly. They've even allowed Roncalio to leave on loan. He's playing at Valencia.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a weird decision. You know, Johnny was allowed to leave and go off to Atletico Madrid and then Wolves. Sergio Gomez is playing for Sevilla. They didn't get a fortune for selling him. Fontes went off, an experienced central defender. So they clearly haven't strengthened. They haven't given the managers the best chance with their transfer policy. Aspas being injured is a problem, but he's played a lot of the season, certainly most of the games under the first manager, Antonio Mohamed. Cardoso hasn't had the luxury of Gomez and Aspas on a regular basis. And now we're left with Fran Escribar. The thing I would say about Escribar, he knows the players at Celta. He would know the opposition, as opposed to this being like when Gary Neville came into Valencia or Tony Adams went into Granada, where it was
glory
a manager
days.
Where a manager came in and didn't know the Valencia players or Granada players and didn't know the opposition. Escobar knows the league, knows every team that they're going to be playing against. I'm sure he's been watching games all through the season. He will have some idea of what's needed at Celta Vigo. So it's I hate to use the cliche safe pair of hands, but it looks a sensible appointment in terms of Antonio Mohamed, Miguel Cardoso not being involved in this league in the past. So it's quite natural to expect that it's going to take them a while to adapt. But to choose two of those in one season, it made sense that they went for a regular old face from La Liga in Escribar.
Which job was it where he looked like he couldn't be bothered? Was that Getafe? Where
I looked at his record. Getafe wasn't very good. Elche was good.
Yeah.
He had his moments at Villarreal, but he tinkered with the system, and that eventually that came to an end. So I think if he can get back to... Yeah, I think you're right. I think Getafe was the one where he was...
He gave up before the end of the season.
He wasn't the only one. There was other managers around that time that had the Getafe job. Didn't Kike Sanchez Flores?
Yeah, he walked out.
Jack Ian, he walked out because there was a lack of direction that the club were going in. How times have changed. But so it makes sense from... I mean, considering that he was sacked on after the game, the defeat on Sunday morning, and before midnight on Sunday evening, Escribar was in place, kind of leads you to believe that something was in place, ready, in case Celta Vigo lost at Eibar. And with 5 minutes to go, was he in a job? Was he going to keep his job with a 0-0? Sergio Henrique getting the goal and sort of sealed his fate now. So are they going to go down? There's every chance. Yeah, we're not seeing enough from Celta Vigo. If Maxi Gomez and Aspas can start playing again together, I think Aspas is out for a considerable amount of weeks. Maxi Gomez missed the sitter. His confidence has gone downhill. So they're starting to look better defensively, but they've got to start scoring goals again.
Really quick one before we get on to the predictions, Terry. Morata, 2 goals.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And I am pleased for any striker that's had a tough time and then bounces back. And they're a manager that's really hard to please. He's been aided by the fact that Costa's injured again. But there is now an element that you're looking at Costa's form this season, compare it to Morata. Morata looks miles better than Costa at the moment. He's at 3 goals for Morata. Costa's only got 1 all season. I know he's been injured for a large chunk of it, but he looks dynamic. He's working the channels. He's a threat in the air and he's linking up well with Griezmann. And he looked really sharp. Confidence back for a centre-forward is so important. And Atletico Madrid look like they've got a player on their hands now. And the partnership between him and Griezmann looks really good. That was a brilliant performance from Atletico Madrid against a team that are playing really well in a good run of form. The way they've managed the game, no attacking play in the first 15, 20 minutes. Didn't give Real Sociedad a chance at goal. And then took control of the game. And once they got 2-0 up, even against 10 men, is there a better team in the world playing with 10 men and just inviting you to cross the ball in the box and having 2 centre-halves in Jimenez and Godin, who actually looked like they enjoyed the last 25 minutes, just heading balls away? It was almost a practice run for the Juventus game, where they have a 2-0 lead. And that's how I guess they're going to play against Juventus.
So, Monday night, we've got Leganés against Levante. You might not have too many more Monday nights to come in La Liga, but that's not certain yet, is it? It was reported that they were scrapping them, but that was, my understanding, that was Rubiales from the Federation who says that, but not yet, the league haven't yet said that, but they are going to have some talks about it, so we'll see
Tevez then said that maybe Barcelona and Real Madrid have to play on Monday nights.
Yes, which is almost the exact opposite. I think they're talking about moving the free-to-air slot onto a Saturday and then putting some other games on Monday. I think fewer games on the Monday and being fair about who plays would seem to make sense.
Yeah, and be sensible, but the fixtures have local derbies.
Yes, yeah.
Don't have, you know, one team travelling the length of the country to play on a Monday night or Friday night. I mean, you look at the Madrid derbies that could be available this year, where both sets of supporters, you know, we have Monday night football in the Premier League, and it's not a big moan, is it? It's not the same team playing every Monday. It's organised in a way that it's, you know, Liverpool Man United recently has been on a Monday night. So it's not exclusively for those clubs that are in the bottom end of the division, trying to fit them on television. So I think Monday night football still can work. But like you, I agree, it doesn't have to be every week. There has to be a fairer proportion of it. It shouldn't be Leganés and Levante or Leganés every Monday night or Friday night, or Eibar Mondays and Fridays. It should be spread around.
You did reasonably well on the predictions, Terry, this week. Copa del Rey, you said Barca would win 2-1. You said Getafe would win 1-0 at Betis. So you got the right outcome on both of those. You sort of bottled out a bit and you went for a 2-2 draw in La Liga in the second Clásico, where obviously Barca won by a goal to nil. Now, we had lots of entries. Thank you to everybody who got in touch. We've had a couple of inspirational shouts. Gav, our regular contributor, 3-0 away win in the Copa del Rey. As also did PCAP. We'll get back to PCAP in a moment. Now, Berlompi and Matthew both said Betis 1, Getafe 2, so credit to them as well. Lots of people had Barca winning both games. George, optimistic, mate, both Real Madrid wins. Afraid not. But the no prize this week goes to PCAP, who got the 0-3. He had 2-0 Getafe and 2-1 Barca in the cool. League Clásico.
Very close.
That's a pretty good effort. If there was a prize, you'd be winning a prize. So congratulations on winning nothing.
The no prize.
Yes.
prize, consolation prize.
Yeah. So this week coming up, I tell you what, we haven't worked out which ones we're doing, Terry. So shout up when you're happy with the one to make a prediction. Europe, first of all, we're not doing these. Real Madrid Ajax second leg is on Tuesday, 2-1 Real Madrid from the first game. And then Thursday, next round of Europa League starts. Sevilla against Sparta Prague, Zenit against Villarreal, Valencia against Krasnodar. So a bit of travelling for the Spanish clubs in those. Now then, next round of La Liga. So you've got a shout up of three of these that you fancy predicting. So Friday, Athletic against Espanyol.
Home win.
What are you going to go?
2-0.
2-0, okay. Yeah, right.
Athletic in good form despite losing to Valencia.
Yeah, okay. Saturday, Alaves against Eibar. Atletico against Leganés. Barca against Rayo Vallecano.
Getafe. Cool. I'll go home win.
So what are you going to? Are you having Barca Rayo? What are you going to? You need to score.
That's too obvious.
Okay, and then Getafe Huesca.
Nope.
Okay, Sunday then Celta Vigo Betis.
Yeah, I'll go for that one.
Yep. Go on. What are you going to go for?
0-2 to Betis.
Oh right. So no Fran Escribar bounce then.
I'm going to go for the refreshed, revitalised Betis. To cheer up, God, a miserable-looking Kike Setien.
Yes, and to make friends.
He really was down. He got the crowd on his back. They're calling for him to go. And he looked a broken man at the end of the game. I think it's really upset him, the fact the crowd have turned on him so quickly.
Yeah.
The first bit of trouble, the crowd have turned on him. So Joaquin made an interview after the game urging the supporters to stick with the team and, most importantly, with the coach. So I think it's going to be a big week for Betis.
Okay.
Are they with the manager or are they against him? My guess is they're fully with him and they're putting a performance next week against Celta.
Okay. Girona against Valencia. Levante Villarreal.
Sevilla. That's a good one.
Yeah, go on.
I'm going to go home win, Levante.
So Levante...
2-1.
Okay, so that's your three. And then the others are Sevilla versus Real Sociedad, Valladolid against Real Madrid. We're not doing a midweek podcast this week because Terry's away. So we'll be back with another podcast. Thank you for all the ideas for the midweek one. Thank you to everybody who listened to the Simeone one. If you haven't, it's there and you can go back and listen to it because it's relatively timeless. We're just looking back on the Simeone years to this point so far. So thank you for the ideas. Keep those coming and we'll see you for another regular podcast next week. Bye-bye.